Hello, ladies and gentlemen. This is Dan Trotter, Pretty Good Bible Studies. I am now going to cover 1 Kings 18, verses 1 through 19. Elijah, in this passage, will be confronting King Ahab because Elijah has previously, in the last chapter, told Ahab there's going to be 3.5 years of famine and drought in your country, northern Israel, for what you've done. Now, Ahab ruled between 874 and 853 BC, so that's our time frame. Our context is this. In the previous chapter, we see Elijah staying at the house of the widow of Zarephath, whose son he raised from the dead. He was staying there because the water had dried up at the brook Cherith, which was probably east of the Jordan, the water having dried up because of the drought. So that's our background here as we start 1 Kings 18, verses 1 through 6. After a long time, in the third year, the word of the Lord came to Elijah. Go and present yourself to Ahab, and I will send rain on the land. So Elijah went to present himself to Ahab. Now the famine was severe in Samaria, and Ahab had summoned Obadiah, who was in charge of his palace. Obadiah was a devout believer in the Lord. While Jezebel was killing off the Lord's prophets, Obadiah had taken 100 prophets and hidden them in 2 caves, 50 in each, and had supplied them with food and water. Ahab had said to Obadiah, go through the land to all the springs and valleys. Maybe we can find some grass to keep the horses and mules alive so we will not have to kill any of our animals. So they divided the land they were to cover, Ahab going in one direction and Obadiah in another. Now verse 1 says, after a long time in the third year, just to get our chronological orientation straight a little bit, this is what John Gill says about that, quote, when 2 years and more were gone from the time the drought and famine began, or rather from the time of the prophet's departure to the brook Cherith, which might be 6 months after the famine began. So we assume that Elijah announces the famine's coming, takes a while before the famine is realized by Ahab that it's actually here, and then 3 more years with the widow, well, at the brook Cherith, 6 months there, and then 3 more years with the widow. This is what Jameson, Fawcett, and Brown say. The early rain fell in our March, the latter rain in our October. Though Ahab might have first ridiculed Elijah's announcement, yet when neither of these rains fell in their season, he was incensed against the prophet as the cause of the national judgment and compelled him, with God's direction, to consult his safety in flight. This was 6 months after the king was told there would be neither dew nor rain, and from this period the 3 years in the passage, in this passage, are computed. So we assume Elijah hung around, perhaps in Samaria, after he had pronounced judgment on the land, and then when the early and latter rains didn't show up, then that's when he headed off to the brook Cherith, stayed there for a while, and then went back to Zarephath, which is on the Mediterranean coast near Sidon, and there he stayed with the widow of Zarephath for another 3 years. Now, when God tells Elijah to present himself to Ahab, we need to remember that Ahab had been looking for Elijah for a long time, I'm sure, maybe to kill him, maybe to get him to reverse his curse. For whatever reason, we can assume he was looking for Elijah, but couldn't find him. In fact, we're going to find out later when Elijah runs into Obadiah, the keeper of Ahab's palace. Obadiah is going to inform Elijah that Ahab had been looking for him all over the place. So we're now at the end of the 3.5 years of famine. This is a famous 3.5 years. 3.5 years in the scriptures is always doom and gloom and tribulation. And this is another example of that. Think about the 3.5 years, the times, and half a time, the 1260 days in the book of Revelation, which was a symbol of judgment, doom, and gloom. Well, here is the first instance of that. We read about this famous 3.5 year period of drought in James 5:17. James says this, Elijah was a man with a nature like ours, yet he prayed earnestly that it would not rain. And for 3 years and 6 months, it did not rain on the land. Jesus mentioned this 3.5 years in Luke 4:25. But I, this is Jesus speaking, but I say to you, there were certainly many widows in Israel in Elijah's days when the sky was shut up for 3 years and 6 months while a great famine came over all the land. So this is a famous 3.5 year drought. Now God tells Elijah to go present himself to Ahab, and Elijah does it. He presents himself. Well, he went in order to present himself to Ahab. Now, that shows a lot of faith and trust in God, because Elijah knew that Ahab was trying to kill him. He must have known. On the other hand, maybe he thought Ahab might be happy with the good news. That might have been in his mind too. Well, with the word of God and with the hope that Ahab would be cheered up, Elijah went, but he was still brave to do it, because in the natural, Ahab could very easily have killed him. Now, in verse 3, we see Ahab had summoned his steward of the palace, Obadiah. They used to call these people the castellans in the Middle Ages, the people who were in charge of the palace. Now, I'm going to drop down and see why Ahab summoned Obadiah in verse 5. Obadiah was going to go with Ahab looking through the drought-stricken land, looking for springs of water, maybe a valley that has grass in it, because he doesn't want to kill all of his horses and mules, which, of course, are symbols of power. Horses are especially rare, as we have noted as we go through the Old Testament. And if you can't feed the horses and mules, you've got no choice but to kill them and eat them. That would be a great economic law. So they divided the land they were to cover. Ahab went one way and Obadiah another, and that's when Obadiah is going to run into Elijah. Now, there's a little parenthesis about Obadiah that our author tells us about. First of all, we are told that Obadiah was a devout believer in Yahweh. Now, that's interesting, because here we have a king wanting to kill a prophet of Yahweh, Elijah, and a queen who is persecuting and killing the prophets of Yahweh, namely Jezebel. Verse 4 says Jezebel was killing off the Lord's prophets. And yet, in the midst of all that persecution, we have a devout believer in Yahweh with a trusted governmental official. He was working with Ahab to look for water, and he was keeping Ahab's palace. Now, that is curious, to say the least. The name Obadiah means servant of Yahweh, according to Ellicott. And that name, according to Ellicott, is, quote, curiously significant of the hesitating and temporizing attitude of Ahab, that while Jezebel is suffered to persecute, i.e. kill all the prophets of Yahweh, she's persecuting, a high officer in the court is able to profess openly the service of Yahweh and secretly to thwart the cruelty of the queen. That's by hiding 50 prophets in one cave and 50 prophets in another cave. In his heart, Ellicott continues, Ahab always seems to acknowledge the true God, but is overborne by the commanding and ruthless nature of Jezebel. Oh, what a good application point there is. You got a weak husband, a shilly-shallying, temporizing, mug-wumping, tear-giversating husband who can't make up his mind which way to go, and then you got a domineering wife who knows exactly where she wants to go, and it's not good. Terrible marriage Ahab and Jezebel had, and we'll see the end of it as we move through the book of Kings. Now, this Obadiah, the keeper of the castle, the Jews, some rabbis say he's Obadiah the prophet, the canonical prophet. That can't be true. The Cambridge commentary says no. Obadiah the prophet, was a contemporary of Jeremiah, who, of course, was 6th century, and we're now in the 9th century. About 200-300 years earlier than that. So this is a different Obadiah. We need to keep that straight. He put the 50 prophets in one cave and 50 prophets in another cave, and he gave them food and water. Now, food and water during a famine and a drought that's going on for 3.5 years, this must have cost Obadiah a ton of money, not to mention the fact that he was risking his life. If he got caught, Jezebel would have had his head in a minute. He gave them bread and water. It sounds like they're in prison. But what it means is that's a metaphor for all sorts of provisions, whatever the prophets needed to keep themselves alive. I'm not saying it would be steak and potatoes in the exigent circumstances, but enough to keep them going. Now, Obadiah had to be very much trusted by Ahab, because he sent Obadiah out alone to look for grass. And if Obadiah had been corrupt, he could have just said, oh, you've got grass. I'm going to tell Ahab that you have grass, and he's going to come take it away from me. So why don't you line my pockets, and I won't tell Ahab? Obadiah could have made some money doing this by being corrupt, but Ahab entrusted him not to be corrupt. After all, he was a servant of Yahweh, and those people tended not to be corrupt. We go to 1 Kings 18:7-8. As Obadiah was walking along, Elijah met him. Obadiah recognized him, bowed down to the ground, and said, "Is it really you, my lord Elijah?" "Yes," he replied, "go tell your master, Elijah is here." Now, where did this meeting take place? Well, it's probably on the road from Zarephath to Samaria. Zarephath is up near Sidon on the Mediterranean coast outside of Israel. Samaria is in roughly in the middle of Ephraim, which is north of Jerusalem. Somewhere in between there they met, and Obadiah recognized Elijah. He had probably seen Elijah at Ahab's court before Elijah absconded and went to the brook Cherith in the wilderness to escape Ahab. And when Elijah had first told Ahab that there was going to be a 3.5-year drought, it was probably near the palace somewhere, and Obadiah was there. He managed the palace, so he recognized Elijah. And he said, "Is it really you, my lord Elijah?" He probably was shocked to think that he would just run into Elijah in the wilderness or in the countryside. And of course, Elijah might have changed his appearance. It had been a while, 3 years since Obadiah had seen him. Maybe he let his hair grow out, who knows? Or it could be he was just saying, "Wow, I can't believe it's you." In other words, he knew it was Elijah. He wasn't asking that question for information. It was a rhetorical statement. "Is it really you, my lord Elijah?" At any rate, Elijah answers this perhaps rhetorical question and said, "Yes, it's me. Now go tell your master," that's Ahab, "tell your master Elijah is here." Now Elijah probably thought it was imprudent to suddenly walk into Ahab's court unannounced. He probably would have been killed before he could say anything, so he wants Obadiah to break the news to Ahab to prepare the way, if you will. So we go now to 1 Kings 18, 9 through 15. "What have I done wrong?" asked Obadiah, and we're going to see here that Obadiah's not so hot on that idea to go walking back to Ahab and saying Elijah's coming. "What have I done wrong?" asked Obadiah, "that you are handing your servant over to Ahab to be put to death? As surely as the Lord your God lives, there's not a nation or kingdom where my master has not sent someone to look for you. And whenever a nation or kingdom claimed you were not there, he made them swear they could not find you. But now you tell me to go to my master and say, Elijah is here? I don't know where the Spirit of the Lord may carry you when I leave you. If I go and tell Ahab and he doesn't find you, he will kill me. Yet I, your servant, have worshipped the Lord since my youth. Haven't you heard, my lord, what I did while Jezebel was killing the prophets of the Lord? I hid 100 of the Lord's prophets in 2 caves, 50 in each, and supplied them with food and water. And now you tell me to go to my master and say, Elijah is here? He will kill me." A little repetition there for emphasis. Elijah said, "As the Lord Almighty lives, whom I serve, I will surely present myself to Ahab today." Of course, that's an oath, "as the Lord lives," a very common oath. It's a serious oath. It's not a rash oath. He's swearing by Yahweh. So Obadiah starts his response to Elijah by saying, "Look, what have I done wrong that you would have me put to death? Why should I be punished? I'm a servant of Yahweh. I'm a prophet." He was not a prophet, I'm sorry. He's a servant of Yahweh. And then he says, "Look, Ahab has been looking for you everywhere, not a nation or kingdom where Ahab has not sent someone to look for you." Now, this could be a hyperbolic statement on the part of Obadiah that there wasn't one nation where Ahab had not sent somebody to look for Elijah. But it could be literal. It could be that Ahab had sent agents to each of the 10 tribes, and he's calling them nations here, although that seems sort of strange to me. Or it could be that Ahab had actually sent agents into the tributary nations around Israel, like Edom and Moab and Zobah. Adam Clark says this, quote, "Ahab must have had considerable power and authority among the neighboring nations to require and exact this, and Elijah must have kept himself very secret to have shunned such an extensive and minute search." In other words, Elijah was really laying low and Ahab was looking for him. That is assuming, of course, that Obadiah is speaking literally here and not hyperbolically. And I assume he is. I think Clark is right that he is speaking literally. So Obadiah's fear is quite understandable. And what is his fear? He's afraid that Elijah's just going to disappear again after Obadiah makes Ahab aware that Elijah's in the vicinity. Verse 12, Obadiah says, "I don't know where the Spirit of the Lord may carry you, Elijah, when I leave you." In other words, I don't know what part of the wilderness you're going to escape to. And then I'm going to be in a spot. If I go back and tell Ahab that you were here and then you're not here, he's going to kill me. Now, the question arises is, why would Ahab kill Obadiah if Ahab could not find Elijah after Elijah's whereabouts had been made known to him? Here's a couple of options from the commentator pool. First of all, Ahab would be angry at Obadiah as a cursed imposter who deluded Ahab with vain hopes. In other words, Ahab could just be so upset. "Oh, we found Elijah." He goes to look for Elijah. Elijah's not there. And so he comes out and takes it back out on Obadiah. That could be. Another possibility is that Ahab would be angry because Obadiah didn't capture Elijah on the spot, but let him escape. You let him escape, Obadiah, off with your head. I imagine Obadiah is pretty sensitive about his situation anyway. He's a worshiper of Yahweh in a totally and utterly pagan court with two bloodthirsty, or at least one bloodthirsty queen in charge who's trying to kill the prophets of Yahweh. And so he's very sensitive about how Ahab is going to react to the news if Elijah is not there as Obadiah had promised. Now, Obadiah continues speaking to Elijah, and he says, "Haven't you heard, Elijah, what I did while Jezebel was killing the prophets?" He's now trying to establish himself as a friend of Yahweh. He saved 50 prophets here, 50 prophets there in two caves, and he's saying, "Look, if I went to all that trouble to save prophets, why would we want another supporter of Yahweh to be killed?" And that's what's going to happen. He's trying to establish his credentials with Elijah as a worshiper of Yahweh, and so please have some mercy on me, Elijah. You prophesy for Yahweh, I serve Yahweh, so I'm on your side, so why would you have me put myself in such danger that I would be killed? He mentions Jezebel killing the prophets, Obadiah does. Jezebel was probably killing those prophets during the drought. One of my commentators says this bad woman would attribute the public calamity to Elijah not being able to find him. She would naturally wreak her vengeance on the prophets of Jehovah who were within her reach, the prophets of Yahweh. In other words, instead of blaming her sin for the drought, she's blaming the prophets who are pointing out her sin for the drought. Now, when Obadiah tells Elijah that he has hidden 100 prophets of Yahweh in two different caves, he was not bragging. He was pointing out to Elijah it would be senseless to get a servant of the Lord killed, especially since there were so few servants of the Lord in the northern kingdom. It was not only senseless to get a servant of the Lord killed, but it would be ungrateful. Obadiah saying, "Look, I'm a faithful servant of God, and here you are, you're going to get me killed." So Elijah responds in verse 15, "As the Lord Almighty lives," there's the oath, "I will surely present myself to Ahab today." In other words, don't worry about it, Obadiah. I'm not going to disappear after you reveal to Ahab that I've been around the area. I'm going to actually put my body in front of Ahab so you will be safe. Now let's look a little further about what might have happened if Elijah had disappeared after Obadiah tells Ahab that Elijah was near. This is a little speculation on my part. What might Ahab say or do to Obadiah if Elijah disappears? Here's the first thing he could say. "You lied to me, Obadiah, about seeing Elijah." Well, I don't know. What motive could Obadiah have for lying about Elijah? Of course, you realize that Ahab was not exactly a rational person. He was probably very upset about the drought, full of hatred for the prophets of Yahweh, and he might have just gotten mad and said, "You lied," even though that's not very rational for him to say that because there's no motive for Obadiah to lie. Or, option number two, Ahab could say to Obadiah, "Obadiah, you are in cahoots with Elijah. After all, you're both prophets of Yahweh, or you're both servants of Yahweh." Again, the problem with that is, what motive would Obadiah have to tell Ahab that Elijah was present if Obadiah and Elijah were in cahoots with each other? But again, Ahab is not necessarily rational. He might not necessarily think that far ahead. And Obadiah is nervous about Ahab for good reason. He's very sensitive about what Ahab might say. But so that's a possibility of what Ahab could have said to Obadiah. A third possibility is Ahab could think Obadiah was indeed telling him the truth, but that Elijah had finked out on Obadiah by running. In other words, Obadiah's not in cahoots with Elijah. He's not lying. He's telling the truth. He's doing exactly what he was supposed to be doing. But Elijah then runs from fear. And then Ahab would be angry about that because Elijah had escaped, and he would take his anger out on Obadiah by killing Obadiah. Again, that's irrational on the part of Ahab, but it's something he might do considering he was sort of an irrational person, it seems to be. So those are three possibilities, and I've already mentioned two other possibilities from the commentator pool. Ahab could look at Obadiah and said, "Why did you deceive me with vain hopes? I thought I had him. You let him get away. I'm angry at you. Bam, off with your head." Option number five, Ahab could look at Obadiah and said, "Where is he? You let him get away. You could have captured him, but you didn't. You just let him get away." So, for whatever reason, and I gave you five possibilities there, Obadiah is very, very nervous about Elijah disappearing, and Elijah puts him in ease. "I'm going to go see Ahab." Now, why was Elijah intent on going to see Ahab, besides protecting Obadiah? Why was he so gung-ho about seeing Ahab? Well, first of all, God had told him in verse 1, as we've already read, I want you to present yourself to Ahab, Elijah. And of course, Elijah is an obedient prophet. And the second reason why he would be hot to see Ahab is because it would mark the end of the drought, and I'm sure Elijah was as sick of the drought as everybody else was. So we go to 1 Kings 18, verses 16 through 19, and we'll finish up this audio. So Obadiah went to meet Ahab and told him, and Ahab went to meet Elijah. When he saw Elijah, he said to him, Is that you, you troubler of Israel? I have not made trouble for Israel, Elijah replied, but you and your father's family have. You have abandoned the Lord's commands and have followed the Baals. Now summon the people from all over Israel to meet me on Mount Carmel, and bring the 450 prophets of Baal and the 400 prophets of Asherah who eat at Jezebel's table. Now we can speculate as Ahab leaves his palace, leaves Samaria, and goes out to meet Elijah in the wilderness, out there somewhere. Was Ahab perhaps a little bit afraid? Elijah's very bold. He's just walking right into my kingdom. Maybe Elijah is going to pronounce another judgment on me, another curse. So maybe Ahab was a little afraid. Or maybe Ahab was bent on revenge. I'm going to get that son of a gun. He prophesied 3.5 years of drought. I'm going to kill him. We don't know. We can only speculate. When he sees Elijah, he says, Is that you, you troubler of Israel? Why did Ahab ask that? Well, it could be he was literally inquiring, was he talking to the right person, Elijah? Elijah's hair could have grown so long over the several years since Ahab had seen him, so Ahab couldn't recognize him. Well, I don't know. Why would he not cut his hair? I think most probably it's a rhetorical question. Is that you? It's rhetorical. He knows who it is. It's just a rhetorical question. He calls him a troubler of Israel. Well, now, that's not true. Elijah wasn't troubling Israel. Ahab was. It was Ahab's sin, his promotion of Baal and Asherah worship. That was his sin that caused God not to send rain, not Elijah's sin. Ahab didn't like the message, no rain, so he attacked the messenger who said there would be no rain. Jameson Fawcett Brown says that here a violent altercation took place. I don't know about that. I think they were just word wrangling with each other. I don't think they actually got involved in a violent altercation. That sounds like a fist fight. But Elijah blames the Baal worship not only on Ahab, but also on Ahab's father's family. Ahab's father was Omri, who ruled 885 to 874. And I assume the family refers to members of Omri's family who helped Omri do the Baal worship. So all this is setting up a big, huge contest, a big confrontation in Mount Carmel, the famous confrontation of Elijah versus the prophets of Baal, which we are going to cover in the next chapter. It's going to be at Mount Carmel, this contest. If you'll look at the map at the far northwestern corner of Israel, there's a little peninsula of land that juts out into the Mediterranean Sea. To the north and east is a bay, the Bay of Acre. At the northern edge of that bay on the Mediterranean coast is the medieval city of Acre. The Romans call it Ptolemais. It's where the movie, a good lot of the scenes of the movie Exodus was filmed there, by the way. I've been there and saw where they pointed out. You remember seeing this in the movie? Interesting place. But anyway, that's on the north of the bay. On the south of the bay is Mount Carmel. I've been there, too. It's a beautiful city. You walk up on that city and look out over the Mediterranean Sea. There's flowers and botanical products all over the coast, all over the slope of the mountain, climbing up to Mount Carmel. Now, the mountain was not exactly at that. Well, it's pretty close to that, to the Mediterranean Sea, but it also extends further on down into the valley. And, of course, to the northeast of Mount Carmel is the Jezreel Valley, that famous Jezreel Valley, where, for example, Gideon fought the Midianites and all, and where Solomon got killed. It was at the other end of the valley. The valley stretched from the Mediterranean Sea, from the Bay of Acre, all the way down to the Jordan River Valley. So this place is well known, and of course the contest with the prophets of Baal is well known. Now why did Elijah all of a sudden propose this contest? This is what Gill says about that. Quote, no doubt, but more discourse passed between Ahab and Elijah, though not recorded, before Elijah made this motion to Ahab. It is very probable that after some dispute between them, who was the true God, and a dispute about idolatry as the cause of the lack of rain, Elijah proposed to the king what he afterwards did to the people, to which he could not object. In other words, Elijah proposed a contest between the prophets of Baal and Yahweh, And then he not only proposed that to Ahab, he proposed it to the people of Israel. And it would be hard for Ahab to back down from that because it was an in-your-face confrontation. You think Baal's bigger than my God? Well, we'll see about that. You got enough guts to fight him? Oh, you don't, huh? You don't want to have a battle between Yahweh and the prophets of Baal? What are you, a coward? What is Baal? He's got a bunch of cowards representing him? So really, Ahab really had no choice but to accept this contest. Now, some other factors that might have urged Ahab to consent to the contest. He might have actually thought Baal was greater than Yahweh, and he was thinking, aha, I'm going to show you that Baal is going to beat Yahweh. I don't know how degraded and stupid Ahab was, but he could have thought that. He could have thought, well, I don't know who's the greater God, Baal or Yahweh, but whoever wins this contest is going to make it rain, and I need some rain in my kingdom. Now, Elijah mentions the 450 prophets of Baal and 400 prophets of Asherah. Baal, of course, is the male goddess of present-day Lebanon, Phoenicia. And, of course, that's very close to Mount Carmel. That's close to the northern kingdom of Israel, and that idolatry had seeped on over into northern Israel when Ahab introduced it. And Baal was the male god of the area, and Astarte, or Asherah, was the female goddess, the goddess whom was worshipped by the offering of Easter eggs, colored eggs, because eggs stood for fertility. She had many breasts, pretty ugly. If you look at Wikipedia and look at the picture of Asherah, pretty disgusting. She went under other names too, Ishtar in some places. I forgot. All over the ancient Near East, this goddess was worshipped, and it was totally, utterly disgusting idolatry. And notice there were 850 of these prophets. They ate at Jezebel's table. That doesn't mean they all ate with Jezebel. Of course, it means that Jezebel provided for their food, their upkeep. So she was supplying 850 pagan prophets. She was utterly sunk into idolatry. And notice, Elijah is challenging 850 prophets to a contest. One Yahweh prophet versus 850 prophets of demons. Yes, God had the pagans right where he wanted them. And that sets us up for our next audio. First Kings 18, verses 20 through 46. Elijah versus the prophets of Baal, the famous contest at Mount Carmel. I hope you'll see you for that exciting contest, and I hope you enjoyed this audio.